hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Good Areas Live. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is Varun Alvaconda, who even if you try, you will not be able to find him on social media. And we are here to preview the upcoming 5-match test series between England and India in England, which kicks off at Headingley on Friday. Varun, Graham Swan has dubbed this as a warm-up series for the Ashes. How much does that wind you up?
No, I think the full sentence was fine. I think it's just classic media headlines, isn't it?
I mean, honestly, I'm very perplexed by this constant obsession with the Ashes, even with the World Test Championship cycle existing, because every test match is important. It has percentage points. Yet English cricket seems to be centered around the Ashes. And I mean, Jimmy Anderson could have been playing this series if not for that, you know, obsession. So I don't know, man. I kind of feel like it's a bit bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 150-year-old history compared to something which started 6 years ago, isn't it? So I think, I guess that's their logic. So I assume the more it grows, the more they'll care about it.
Anyway, I still feel like it's a marquee series, but of course...
Well, it took them, what, like 44 years to care about the ODI World Cup?
That's also true. But anyway, with respect to it being a marquee series, of course, like the fact that both Rohit and Kohli aren't around anymore, it does diminish the series in terms of like crowd pull and advertising, general marketability, and perhaps even TV audiences. We don't know that yet, but you'd expect it to have some sort of an impact. But this is still a very, very exciting series because you've got, you know, a new look India, and they've got lots of stuff to figure out. And England are a bit more settled, but are they really, right?
Yeah, I think England's probably batting is largely settled, you'd say. The bowling is, it's not unsettled. It's just everyone's injured all the time.
Yeah, that's also true. And also, if you think about it, right, like their seam bowling attack is, I mean, it's looking quite light. And I know that India has lots of like fresh new batters out there who still have to stake their claim. Sai Sudarshan probably being the biggest one. But then again, it's not like they're coming up against a bowling attack which will eat them up in a blink, right? Like this could be very, very exciting or tantalizing.
Yeah, definitely. I think it is not the strongest England bowling attack we've seen. Well, like if it, ever since Broad and Anderson have started playing together, I assume, right?
Who, by the way, why are they known as Broaderson and not Androd?
That is a very good point.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's true, yeah.
Let's start with England. I know there's lots of stuff to talk about with respect to India, but we'll come to that later because England have actually announced their playing 11 for this test, which they always do. And we created a playing 11 for them on our Good Areas chat. And this was exactly the same one. Like, they've basically selected a good team over here. You've got Crockett opening the batting, right? Ollie Pope makes it ahead of Jacob Bethell, Joe Root and Harry Brook and Ben Stokes, and even Jamie Smith. Those four guys were expected to be there, much like Crockett up top. And then you've got Wokes at 8, which is honestly a bit of a luxury. And Brighton Cass also bats, who is in at 9, and he can crank it up. And so can Josh Tung, right? With Shoaib Bashir being the only spinner who will have to bowl to a lot of left-handed batters in India, which is a good sign for him, honestly. So how do you think, or how do you like this team?
Yeah, like, I quite like the batting, I think. I don't actually hate Ollie Pope at 3, but it's just, he's so high variance, that's the thing.
You actually pulled out,
unfortunately for him,
the statistic of the century for Ollie Pope. So just to tell our viewers, Varun was busy with his data crunching. And he found that for test batters who have scored north of 3,000 runs, if you look at median balls per dismissal, well, Ollie Pope has the third worst ratio for median balls per dismissal ever. And the only people who have worse ratios are Stuart Broad at number one and Shane Warne at number two. And those guys were primarily bowlers. So that tells you a story.
Yeah, definitely. So I think it's what I'm just looking his numbers up again. So yeah, his median balls per dismissal is 27. So that essentially means 50% of the time he's getting out for less than 27 balls face. And 50% of the time is more than that, right?
That is such a better way to
explain
it.
That is very low. That's extremely low.
I struggled to explain this on the Pro Sports podcast.
Yeah, no, I saw it. I was like, I was just laughing trying to see you explain it.
But his median score in these 27 deliveries is 16.5. So it's not like he's lighting the world or setting the world on fire, right?
Yeah, it's a decent strike rate. It's not a terrible strike rate for... like, for someone who's pretty much, I guess, like, not extreme, I think it's fine. You take I think his median strike rate is about 57. You take that any day for him at number three.
What this also tells you, Varun, is that he's a bit of a standard deviation king, such that I feel like there's a stat out there that whenever he crosses like 35 or something, he goes on to average 80-odd. And whenever he scores a ton, he makes it count as well. The biggest examples are his most recent ton versus Zimbabwe and that ton versus India in the first test, I want to say, in the five-match series that happened last year in India, right?
Yes, 196 so it's, in Hyderabad.
It's those kinds of innings that kind of inflate Ollie Pope's average. But then again, he is experienced. He was vice-captain of England not too long ago and captaining them as well in Ben Stokes' absence. But then, like, you know, the other option is Jacob Bethel. Exciting, but also a false number three, right? So it's not like he would have completely solved their problems.
I don't know if he's a false number three. He might just be a number three.
I mean,
like a false number three in this team might be Ben Stokes, right?
Or Chris Wokes, if you go down the Mulder route.
Or Chris Wokes, yeah. Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I think I'm still a bit iffy on Jacob Bethel because unlike I think most of our team, I'm more traditional when it comes to test selection, which is the complete opposite to the way to I am when it comes to T20 selection.
No, that's fair. Also, I mean, barring Ollie Pope, who could very well be binned mid-series and they replace him with Jacob Bethel. That's very much on the cards. Could happen. But I feel like given that he has experience and he just scored a ton versus Zimbabwe, you kind of give him a go up front. And all he really needs to do in the first three test matches, which he probably gets what, two or three tests, he needs to score a big ton. And that should solve everything.
Yes, I think England's issue is that Duckett's probably quite consistent. He's unlike, I think, Crawley and Pope.
Yes.
Duckett's probably like a high floor, low ceiling. Batter. Whereas Crawley and Pope are both very high ceiling, extremely low floors.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, man. I don't think I'll call Ben Duckett low ceiling because I feel like he is quite consistent for the sort of batter he is, aggressive and, you know, with all those sweep shots, he has all four, right? Conventional, lap sweep, reverse sweep, and paddle, I want to say. I've forgotten the last sweep.
Yes, yeah, that is paddle. It is paddle, right?
Yeah. I think so. Anyway, so we've talked about those guys. Let's talk a bit about Joe Root. He probably is the most important player for England in this series. I know that bowlers have to take 20 wickets, but without Root's runs, I don't see England doing much over here. And his record versus India is beyond spectacular. This guy has 2,846 runs for England versus India. He averages 58 with the bat. 10 of his overall 36 test tons have come versus India. And, you know, for a guy who averages 50 overall, he's averaging 8 runs more for versus India. He is probably, or not probably, he's definitely the best test batter of the 2020s. I think that's a very fair claim to make. And Joe Root does even well versus India when he's playing them in England. So if I compare those two records versus India and England, he has scored 1,574 runs at an average of nearly 75, and he's got 7 of his overall 10 tons in England. Whereas in India, he's averaging a touch under 55. He's, I don't know the numbers of India. I don't have them handy. But overall in England, he scored 6,792 runs at an average of 55. So he's done better at home versus away. 21 of his 36 tons have come in England. I feel like if Joe Root scores 500 runs in this series, then India are in trouble. And that could very well happen.
Yeah, definitely, right? I think he's unbelievable. I also think he matches up quite well to the Indian bowlers in England. So I was just looking this up. So he averages 197 versus Siraj in England.
Wow, that's insane.
Yeah, so it's 135 versus Jadeja. He still averages 40 versus Bumrah in England.
That is crazy, right? Because it's Bumrah.
Yeah, no, but that is an older version of Bumrah, granted. I think we can probably say that. He somehow averages 31 versus Shardul Thakur. He's probably been the best bowler in the low sample size we've seen.
It's crazy how against your post-injury Bumrah is a different beast altogether. But yes, I feel like that'll be the biggest task for England's batters. They'll be really happy with the fact that Bumrah is only going to be featuring in 3 out of the 5 test matches, right? But I feel like Joe Root is that biggest wicket that India need to get, and a lot kind of, you know, rests with him as far as England faring well in this test series is concerned. Other than that, I feel like the bowling attack will be tested. I'm really happy that they've gone with Wokes, who will obviously be the new ball bowler. He'll get the ball to nibble around. Brydon Carse can bend over his back, right? He can bowl the short deliveries. He can crank up his pace. And Josh Tung is similar, I would say. And maybe for Headingley, it makes sense to go with these two because we are told that the conditions are dry, right? And it's going to be soaring north of 30 degrees centigrade during the test match. Now, of course, this is all mere conjecture because we'll only know when the test starts. But you have to play a spinner. And then you probably go for more bowlers who can crank it up as far as pace is concerned. Maybe on decks where the ball nibbles around a bit more, you bring in the wobble ball specialist in Sam Cook, because he only bowls it at, what, 76, 77 miles per hour. But it's a good option to have.
So the way I'm seeing it, I think, is Wokes and Cook are competing for the same spot. Hmm. If they think Wokes isn't fit or he needs a rest, they'll probably bring Cook in.
I'm not sure, man. I feel if you've got a lot of purchase off the deck, yeah, you know, then you play both of them. Why not?
You could, but I don't think England will. I think that's kind of the way I'm seeing things with them. And also, like, I think I've seen pictures of the pitch. I think it looks quite green.
Yeah, but don't ever fall for that.
Again, it's a couple of it's a couple of days before the test.
They'll
so
shave the grass.
If it does remain
it might flatten
green,
out.
I think it might play like Lords then, right?
It could. But then again, every time there is any sort of discourse around the surface being too green, 75% of the times it's a flat deck. I've seen this happen time and time again, right?
Indeed.
So I wouldn't fall for the pictures, honestly. And I think that's what George Dobell also said in his tweet, weirdly enough. But I see Sam Cook as someone who could slot in ahead of Josh Tung whenever conditions are more seam friendly, right? And you can get the ball to nibble off the deck. I see Overton as a cast replacement, right? Because obviously, with those kinds of bowlers, you can't expect them to play all five test matches. Chris Wokes is someone who I actually see is playing all five test matches.
Yeah, he's incredibly fit. If he's actually fit, he can play. He's a workhorse, isn't he?
Yeah.
He plays all six tests last summer from memory.
What was last
summer?
Or
does he miss one?
He might have played
that was West Indies and Sri Lanka.
I think he did. Yes, he did.
Yeah.
And I mean,
So England, I think, so they play six tests a summer. It's either 5-1 or 3-3. From memory.
Interesting to see Bash in there as well. Not interesting. We all expected him to be England's lone spinner. But the thing is that whilst I feel like he's overperformed for England in international cricket, because if you compare his bowling averages in international cricket versus whatever he averages for Somerset, there's a big gulf. But then India have got tons of left-handed batters, or could have tons of left-handed batters. So that is a very favorable matchup for Shoaib Bashir. And this could be like the defining moment for him in this very young career as well.
Yeah, definitely, right? I think one of the... Everyone probably undervalues Moeen Ali's impact in England series wins over India in the past.
No, I don't think anyone
does, repeatedly
man.
Done... I think he repeatedly has done well versus India in England, which is for... But he gets smashed by India in India, which is bizarre when you think about it, right? I think the spinner does play a pretty key role in England, even though it isn't the same as it's in Asia. Mm. It's not like New Zealand, where they're completely useless.
Yeah. No, that's very, very true. Yeah. And we even saw in the Lord's Test, the World Test Championship Final, and the Trent Bridge Test, England versus Zimbabwe, that spinners got some purchase. In Lord's, they got it over time. And in Trent Bridge, I mean, Bash took 9 wickets, right? I know it's Zimbabwe or whatever, but you can't just like not give him credit for taking a 9 for across 2 innings. And I feel like whilst it is stable, England's 11, and I mean, they've got some options within their squad as well, I feel like the lack of experience with respect to the fast bowlers, barring Chris Wokes, obviously, is not ideal. And the batting should be fine, but these guys have to face Bumrah in 3 test matches. We can't not talk about that either.
Also, we were looking at Harry Brooks' numbers. He's terrible versus spin in England. He is averaging 22 versus spin
in
England.
He's terrible versus spin, period. Okay.
Yeah, but in England, Baron, that's the surprising part. How can you be bad versus spin in England?
That's also fair.
That's what I'm surprised at. Yeah,
well, you've got to be bad versus spin in England to be an absolute shit show versus spin elsewhere.
Yes.
I think that's
so that
out.
Could be very interesting.
Yeah. No, very
again, I think the only way, so again, it's going to sound like a very obvious thing, but what India do need to do is get Root and Brook as early as possible at the crease, right? That's your only hope.
Yeah. I suppose so.
Because if the top three get off to a good start, Root will just, he can just milk runs at Villa at this point, right?
What I'll be interesting to see is whether or not Zach Crawley averages 30 by the end of the series. And now that I've said that, expect him to score a double ton in the very first test match. But overall, England are looking good and they are looking far more settled than India.
Yeah, I like, so if Bashir is your worst bowler, I don't think it's too terrible. I like the seamers, all four of them, including Stokes. There's no highs or lows. Like Wokes is incredible in England, so everyone else you'd expect is good at decent. Like there's no bad seamers there.
I'm just very, very curious to see how long Ben Stokes bowls as far as his spells are concerned. Because when I went over to England last summer, he was just fresh off that operation and he was bowling like 8-7 over spells. And both Jared and I were completely flabbergasted as to why he is doing that to himself. But I'm very interested to see how he uses himself in all of this. But overall, England looking good and slightly better than India, of course. And I think that's pretty much it for them. You can remove the graphic. And before we move on to India, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Behram and Varun, and we will be back in like half a minute. So go nowhere.
I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I've been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about batting. Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Behram and Varun. And turn the graphic off for now, Varun, because I have other stuff to talk to you about with respect to India.
All right, let's see it.
I actually want to pick your brain on Shubman Gill as captain. Now, it does kind of make sense in the long run because they had been grooming him and he is thought of as someone who will be a mainstay for India in years to come, him and Jaiswal, basically. But personally, if you'd asked me, I would have gone for Rishabh Pant. I feel like you can split the captaincy duties in all three formats. Although India has been the sort of, or the BCCI has been the sort of cricketing board, which does like the idea of multi-format captains. We've seen it with Rohit, we've seen it with Kohli, and now Gill obviously won't be captaining the T20I side. But then again, if he has control over both the ODI and test teams, maybe that's something that the administrators are in favor of. But barring that hot streak that he experienced or he enjoyed Shubman Gill last year, I mean, overall record is not that amazing. He's averaging 35 with the bat in 32 test matches. He was quite vulnerable in Australia and kept getting bowled. But then you'd think that him batting at four, which does seem to be the tactic that India are going for, will help ease that issue for him because, you know, the ball will hopefully be a bit older. And number four is that main batting position in test cricket. But he has massive shoes to fill. I mean, Sachin Tendulkar and Virat Kohli were the last two batters who batted for India at four. And you'd have to go all the way back into the early 1990s, I think, to find another or different number four batter.
Yeah, so I think who was the number four before Sachin?
I don't know.
Vengsarkar did it for a while.
Maybe Manjrekar?
From memory.
I don't know.
For some reason, Sanjay gives you number three.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
Does give me number three vibes as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, but because it's an absolute luxury, isn't it?
What about Azhar?
To have Sachin and Virat.
Could be Azhar.
Azhar was the number five. I think Sachin moves from six to four because Azhar did not want to get out of five, from what I've heard.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Someone told me that on the comments in one of our videos.
Also, Bumrah was
It's such a luxury, isn't it? Right? So to have Sachin and Virat back-to-back. Not just number four, number three. We have Dravid and Pujara back-to-back as well, right?
No, it's massive shoes to fill. Although the last 4 or 5 years of Virat's career aren't as impressive and his numbers are that of a replacement batter. Plus, today Saad and I were looking at all of his tours to England, right? All four of the tours. And in the first tour, he gets obliterated by Anderson.
It's not four. I think it's just one. But the last one, they played the fifth test.
Oh, yes.
Different
You're
year.
Right. It is. It is three tours if you think about it. But he's averaging around 27, 28 in that last one. And then in the first one, he gets like, you know, annihilated by Anderson. Same fourth to fifth stump line, which is also how he got out every single time in Australia recently. And he averaged 13. Yes. But in that 2018 series where he goes bonkers, he averages like 59, right? Now, Virat, if you look at him overall, then those shoes are massive to fill. But if you look at the last 4 or 5 years, I mean, if Gill averages 38 or 39 this series, would you be satisfied?
I'd be extremely pleased if he averages 38, 39. I don't think Gill needs to have a great series, but he can't have a bad series.
Yeah.
That's the thing. The fans will rip him apart if he averages 25.
He isn't.
Do they not?
They would. And I feel like it's added pressure batting at four and captaining the team, even if, you know, the conditions should suit him better than number three. And he was a high-performing number three for a bit in there. He was the best number three in the world for a very small bit, right? But Shubman Gill is supposed to be generational. We all think that he has an extremely high ceiling and he is going to be a mainstay for India. It's just that the Indian media and the pressure of captaining India can be so brutal that this is going to be a bit of a litmus test for Shubman Gill, not just with respect to his captaincy, but also with respect to his batting and how he copes with that media pressure, which is inevitable when you're from the subcontinent, right? And then again, you've got the task of managing the Bumrah overs, which is not so straightforward. I don't know how much of a say he has over the ultimate starting 11 selection, because Gautam Gambhir now probably has unilateral power with no Rohit and no Kohli. So, yeah, I mean, how do you look at all of that? Do you think he's going to have some major influence?
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. Like, even like he's not a very exciting captain. I think that's the thing, isn't it? So I think Jared was discussing it somewhere that he's a very formulaic captain where he just has a plan and he'll just follow it. And you can't really do that in Test cricket. It's very difficult because the game just can change.
True.
So there is an element. So from what we can see, Gambhir does seem to have the most influence with the team and the tactics. Again, I don't really know. So it's one of those things where... So you almost had to give Shubman the captaincy because I think with Pant, I think the IPL might have just traumatized the BCCI.
Also, yeah.
He just does not... Yeah, I think he just did not look comfortable being the captain,
but
right?
Then
I think his natural game might suffer as well.
You've got to look at his team as well. They had no bowlers for the longest time, right?
Yeah, but I think even what I've seen with Delhi, I think with Pant, he does just seem to just try to be different when he's the captain.
Look, if you ask
me... Whereas you want Pant to just be free, right?
If you ask me completely objectively, Bumrah should be captain, but Bumrah cannot play all the tests, right? And that's he said that. BCCI approached him, but because he can't play all tests and his doctor has also advised him to do the same, to take breaks, that's why he is ruled out from that opportunity or leadership position. I just felt that if you give one format to a single player, then they can maybe focus more on that single format. Whereas now, if the test team is in tatters, it might impact KL and ODIs, vice versa. And I just feel like it's a big task on its own to captain in multi-formats now, especially where cricket is headed. But then again, I like the fact that he's 25. He's still a few years away from his age of batting maturity.
Mm-hmm.
He's supposed to get better. He is already a really, really good bat, forgetting the 35 average, of course, because he started young. We also have to consider that, right?
Yeah.
And he's playing...
Agreed. I started young as an opener.
Yeah, as an opener, and has been playing in the base-playing pandemic, the wobble seam era. So you have to factor in all of those things. But yeah, I mean, I'm quite keen to see how he fares. Before we get to the lineup, Varun, there are a few players that I want you to discuss with you. One of those players is Shreyas Iyer. I know you're not big on him, but if you look at his first-class record, he's averaging around 48.5 in 81 games. And for India, he's averaging close to 37 in 14 test matches. He was a walking wicket in Senna conditions, but look at how much he's upskilled. He has completely conquered his short ball demon, and he seems to be at the peak of his powers. How do you feel about him not being there?
I do think they mishandled him last year when I definitely feel like he should have been given a longer rope, especially away from home. Just give him a chance to develop. I don't have an issue with him not being in the squad this year, though. Mainly because I think if you do look at his Ranji season, a lot of it is, I think, carried by like a 200 on a flat pitch against a bad team. So I don't think his numbers do look that great. You could still argue he could be in the A squad to try. The other batsman, I think, was mishandled was Sarfaraz, wasn't it? Like, I do think that was a complete shit show from BCCI.
Sarfaraz's first-class numbers are otherworldly. When you look at them, you want to pinch yourself and you're like, is this real? Or have they made a mistake over here? Because in 55 first-class games, the man is averaging nearly 66 with the bat, right? For India, he has a better average than Shreyas, although he's played less. He's played 6 test matches and he's averaging 37.1. Now, he was a bit vulnerable or susceptible versus the short delivery, which is why we didn't really get to see him in Australia. But over here, that shouldn't matter as much. I don't know how he could fare or would fare versus lateral movement. But with a first-class record like that, you would expect the Indian selectors to have a wee bit more faith.
Yeah, I think so. I think the smartest thing there, again, would have just been give him Australia and England. Like with that first-class record, he earned the right to flop in international cricket. Right?
Yeah, I think so.
If he fails, he fails. Who cares? Like, none of your batters are making any runs anyway. Like, what are you going to lose in this situation?
Do you think his fitness would have played a role over here?
No, I think he's red ball fit from what I could tell. Like, also, like, one of the things I hate is when people are like, well, he just started off really well. Like, if he, let's say he was averaging 37 and he's in all his innings were spread apart, it's still a sample size of like six test matches, is it not?
Yeah.
Like, any which way, you'll be talking about small sample size and high variance, whether or not he made his runs in the first, like, third and sixth test or all in the first test, right?
Yeah, that's very, very valid. But, you know, I don't have a major issue with both of these guys not making it because I like the two batters who have made it. I know you're not big on Sai Sudarshan either. You've been saying, I'd sell over and over again every time we mention him in the Good Areas chat. And Shayan and I are very much pro-Sai. In fact, I've mentioned this plenty of times before. He's my favorite Sai. Ahead of Kishore and the Opa Gangnam style singer. But, you know, for a number three bat, because that's where he's played his first class cricket, although the sample size is low, he's only played 29 matches. And you'd have to say that that's fortunate in the first place to make your India test debut only after 29 first class games. He's averaging almost 40. You'd take that if he averages almost 40 at number three in this series, but that's also provided if they bat him at three.
No, absolutely. You take that any day from your number three in this era.
True.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, yeah, so I'm the two reasons I'm nervous about him. Again, the average of 39, 40 for someone who's played a lot of cricket in India isn't that high.
Yes, that's...
Again,
that's
he's very
thing.
Young, so...
He's played in India.
I'll give him that.
Yeah.
He's very young, so I'll give him
he's
that.
He's your age.
And even in the eight, like, eight, yeah, yeah, yeah. I think he's the same year as me.
He's 23
he
years
old. Might be younger.
I don't know if he's the same year.
Yeah, he's younger than me. Yeah, year, yeah. He must be like November or September,
look,
right?
Left-handed bat, extremely stylish, an absolute treat to watch when he's on song. Like, as far as aesthetic brilliance goes, I'm a big Sai Sudarshan fan, right? And I mean,
think the second thing is, I'm afraid he's just a new shiny toy for Indian like social media.
Look!
Like, we saw this with Shreyas, Sarfraz. They like someone to push. And I think he has, all it takes is two bad tests for him and then he'll just be out of fashion again.
That's a very valid point. And the shiny new toy syndrome.
I'm like, don't rush him if you don't need to. Right?
That shiny new toy syndrome you speak of is very valid for subcontinent teams again. I've seen India do this. I've seen Pakistan do this. With Sai Sudarshan, I feel like, look, if you have identified him as a number three batter specifically, which is what I feel they should do if he is going to play, then you just stick with him. You let him grow and develop his game. Obviously, he's, 23 years of age. But think of that, 96-odd that he scored in 47 deliveries, I want to say, in the final of the IPL a couple of years back versus CSK. He was even younger, and he's done it at the big stage. So pressure isn't an issue with Sai. That I can say, right? Now, of course, I don't know how he would fare in England, but his game suits or seems to suit, you know, conditions where the ball would move around a bit. I would like to think so. I'm not quite sure about that. But at least, you know, he passes the eye test.
It looks that he's very technically correct. But then he's very technically correct in white ball cricket from what we've seen.
Yeah.
Almost everyone who's seen him bat has seen him in white ball cricket.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people are looking at his A footage, right? For example.
Also, he's an anti-standard deviation king, where you won't see a lot of low scores. There'll just be a lot of 40s.
No, but in test cricket, in first class cricket, he is a standard deviation.
Really?
He has... Yeah, his conversion rate is insane in test cricket.
Oh, no way.
He's either getting 100 or just not getting anything.
First class cricket. He hasn't played test cricket yet.
So first class cricket, yes.
I think if you are going for a projection selection, I don't mind Sai. But then again, to your point, I would like to see them stick with him, right? As opposed to just
if you're gonna,
binning him.
So the other thing is, like, you could try him as the number six, as the rookie spot. Give him a few years and let Karun be the number three. We'll do that when we do the team in a bit.
But just...
You can go through all the combos.
Yeah, just on Karun, right? You're looking at a guy who in his second test match scored that unbeaten 303. Now, he's played six tests and he scored 374 runs. So it's only been that triple 100, which is his only test 100. And imagine getting a triple when you are scoring your maiden test 100. That is phenomenal, right? And it's a great story. But then he was axed and we didn't see Karun Nair for years and years and years. And so many former cricketers also kind of, you know, threw shade at selectors over the years. Now, 116 first-class games for him. He's averaging nearly 50 and he just scored 204 versus the Lions in the A game. So Karun Nair has earned his stripes, which is why I like the story. But for me, he would be ideal for number five. Rishabh Pant, however, in the presser has said that he's batting at five. And now that makes me nervous for Karun because they might not play him at all and might just go Nitish Kumar Reddy at six and Jadeja at seven. And I don't think that's a great ploy.
I don't mind that simply because not the Nitish Kumar Reddy thing. Like, to me, Karun's not useful to me if he's only going to bat at five and six.
But five
is a decent
number.
If you're going to be a senior professional batter... No. If you're going to be a senior professional batter, you have to bat at three and four in this team, right? Because five and six, leave that to the Sai Sudarshan, the Dhruv Jural, one of those lot. Right, because this upside would be that they get used to test cricket and then they can move up, right? If you're in very good form, bat at three or bat at four and then try to score runs there, right? At least for the next 3 years.
We'll come back to this.
That's what I'm thinking with Karun.
We'll definitely come back to this because I have more to add. But before that, we are going to be taking a short break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Behram and Varun and we will be back in like half a minute. So go nowhere.
As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year, and I loved every part of it, except for one, this little evil pin here, because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, all one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, all one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Behram and Varun of the House of Alvaconda. And we are previewing India versus England. Varun made a claim, or not a claim, basically he provided some rationale as to why he would like to watch Sai Sudarshan, someone who's relatively inexperienced, bat at 6, and Karun Nair at 3. My only argument to that, Varun, is that there's a guy who bats at 3, right? And who could be a mainstay for India at 3 in years to come. And then there is a guy who I find to be more reliable in test cricket. So I would rather have Karun Nair face the ball when it's a bit softer, a bit older. And I feel like at number 5, he could absolutely dominate. So that's the other flip side of the coin.
I do agree that Sai could be a number 3. I'm just saying, I just don't think he needs to be that number now. Right? I do. Because if you look back, again, this is where I do think the older selection methods do make more sense. Where like traditionally, even Ricky Ponsingh starts at 6, Sachin starts at 6, Virat starts at 6. They have a few years at 6. Once the team thinks they're ready, then they're pushed up the order, right? Like, Sai may or may not be ready yet, because I don't think you are a specialist number 3 or number 4, right? The only specialist position I think that exists is an opener.
I would say top 3 is more specialist, but now it's gotten a bit different because no one's succeeding at number 3, apart from maybe Kane.
Yeah, because I also think it's so rogue at number 3, right? Everyone's playing anyone at 3, so I do think there is some value in. If I was playing Karun, it has to be a 3 or 4, right? I'd play him at 3 simply because I'm like, you're the experienced professional. We need to protect these younger lot. Figure shit out.
Well,
right?
You guys in the comment section,
it will benefit us in the future.
You guys let us know in the comment section what you feel more comfortable with, because both Varun and I have different thought processes, but both thought processes have value over here, I feel. So let us know what you feel in the comment section. Also, another guy who missed out on this test series was Mohammad Shami. 229 test wickets at under 28 apiece. But in England, I was looking at his record, 14 tests, 42 wickets, an average of 40.5 with the ball, which is quite poor. I would have still picked him just because of the experience, and he's one of the best bowlers in the modern era to attack the stumps. But then again, I feel like perhaps he's not test match fit, because if there was a similar situation to Bumrah where he could play in 2 or 3 test matches, I feel like they'd pick him.
Yeah, it's funny you say he's one of the best bowlers to attack the stumps when his entire issue in England is he doesn't attack it enough.
Yeah, that's also fair. But overall,
so because he's got the classic subcontinent bowler issue of, because if you're a subcontinent bowler, you either bowl that 7 to 8 meter length for the skiddy bounce, or you bowl full for reverse. Either of those things don't translate well to England.
Yeah.
Right, we privately discussed how Wasim Akram doesn't have a great England record.
28, right?
And Waqar Yunus isn't great in center, right?
Yes.
That's partly because they couldn't find the right length. We talk about how like every country is unique. It's like in Senna, that you hit 6 to 7 meters, you get bored and you hit it again. There is no, don't deviate. And that's true for all the countries. And I don't think a lot of the bowlers do realize that. The ones that do are obviously elite.
Yeah. Also, you know, it might as well be time to discuss Jasprit Bumrah. Obviously, 205 wickets in 45 test matches at a bowling average of 19.4 for bowlers in test cricket who have more than 200 wickets. No one has averaged better than Bumrah. That is probably my favorite Bumrah stat. He will be playing 3 test matches. We know this. And we were also discussing privately in our group which 3 tests that would be. Of course, you play him at Headingley because you want to start strong, right? And then is the big question, because you want him to play at Lord's, but maybe Edgbaston suits him most. And then you are in a situation where you just decide, as per the series, you know, scenario, whether you play him in the 4th test or the 5th test. It is a head-scratching sort of, dilemma.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think he said he's playing in the 1st test, right? That's a guarantee from him.
Yeah.
And if India, does he need to play the 2nd, or do you just go play the 2nd anyway?
I don't know. You have to play him at
Lords.
If
India go 2-0 up, you can happily rest him at 3,
I mean,
in the 3rd test.
Bumrah plus the Lords slope, Varun.
That is fair.
Yeah.
That is correct.
Take that, right? But Edgbaston has been really good for fast bowlers. But I was actually telling this or asking Saad this, that would you not rather play Bumrah in the conditions that are least conducive towards fast bowling? Because he's going to be good anyway.
Yeah, also kind of get Saad's point that he's like, play him on the bowling friendly surfaces, you can guarantee a win.
Yes.
Right? Because if we look at like the likely outcomes for India's win, it is Bumrah goes nuts.
Yes.
And the other is England do something brain dead.
Yes. And, right? And both the odds of both of those things happening is very high.
I think it's just, if you're an Indian fan, you're hooping those two on in the same match.
Also, I honestly feel, and I'd bet my money on this, that if Bumrah plays 3 test matches, he is winning 2 for India against this England team.
Yeah, that's fair. He'll at least win 1, I think. If Bumrah plays 3, he'll win you 1.
We also don't know how the weather will act up throughout the series and how many draws we get just because of the English rain, which is notorious or infamous, right?
I think we'll get 1 draw just because of rain. It's because it's England. Yeah, it's a good bet.
I think that's fair, right? But anyway, I personally feel, as far as India's bowling attack is concerned, that Arshdeep plays whenever Bumrah doesn't play. And Siraj is probably your second seamer throughout because...
Do you want to do that seam selection thing?
Yes, bring that then up, right?
You okay, place... I think for some reason I can't get the other layout.
Oh, you can't get the other layout?
So give me a top 6.
My top 6 for India, and this obviously would be different for the both of us, would be KL Rahul, Yashasvi Jaiswal, Sai Sudarshan, Shubman Gill, Karun Nair, Rishabh Pant. But I know Pant's batting at 5. Mm-hmm. He said he'll bat at 5. So I would personally go with that. And then originally, if you remember, I wanted both Nitish Kumar Reddy and Jadeja at 7 and 8. And then you guys convinced me otherwise, that that would be too defensive an option. So now I also believe that based on conditions, only one of NKR or Jaddu should play.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
That's the big
question. I agree with you. I think.
$1 million question, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah, definitely. I don't think the issue I have with Nitish is that I don't think at this point he's in India's 5 best batters. So I think playing him at 6 is quite risky, especially because I have no faith in the top order.
That's very, very true.
Yeah, and he's definitely isn't a good enough bowler to be 7 or 8.
Originally, I thought you'd go with more batting insurance with Nitish at 7 and Jadeja at 8. But then I thought that, look, you're going to win with 20 wickets. It's not like England are invincible. If anything, they're very much vincible. So... you'd probably go with 4 frontline bowlers. And I like your tactic that you probably just play Kuldeep in every game. And Jadeja acts as a second spinner if and when conditions allow for that, which could be frequent if the summer remains dry in England.
Yeah. I think I had Kuldeep in my team anyway, simply because I don't think India are 4 trustworthy seamers.
By the way, I have to ask you, will we see India at any point in the series triple deep, Akash, Kul,
it is a realistic Akash, possibility.
And Arsh.
It is a possibility, is it not?
Look, I feel like you only play Arshdeep when Bumrah doesn't play because you've got Siraj as another new ball bowler, or you play Arshdeep if Siraj is shitting the bed big time. Those are the two scenarios. I don't know which one of Akashdeep and Prasidh Krishna, both hit the deck hard kind of bowlers, is better, because you need a bouncer bowler, right? That's going to be their role, I feel. You tell me. Who's been faring better? Who's done better in first class? And do they just rotate the two throughout?
No, I think you could rotate the two. I like Prasidh more because I think, again, it is IPL form, but whatever I've seen of pitch maps, it looks like his pitch map could translate well to Test cricket. And Akashdeep is such a weird bowler because it seems like he should be a very good stock bowler, but he hasn't been always.
All I'm going to say is that they could potentially have it all rolling in the deep. Because they've got 3 of them, right? But Kuldeep for me is a very important player over here because he turns the ball in both directions. Even if there's a hint of spin around, England aren't a really good team, or actually a pathetic team facing spin. So he becomes all the more important for me. And I mean, there's inexperience in India's bowling. And you could say it's a bit radical, but it does work in theory for me. We haven't even discussed Lord Shardul.
I think I'm pretty sure from what we've seen he is going to play.
Yeah. Shardul?
Yeah.
Really? They are going for him as the third seamer?
From what I've seen. No, as the fourth seamer.
Okay, fourth seamer.
They're going to go 4 seamers in Jadeja from what I've seen.
Okay.
I think.
Interesting.
I have a feeling, because Gambhir does like his all-rounders, right? I think they will go for NKR at 6.
I feel like, if you want more batting, you go with NKR. If you want better bowling, you go with Lord Shardul. He was amazing in the Ranji Trophy, if I'm not wrong. Had a really, really good season. Or maybe I'm mixing things, but that's what my memory...
Yeah, yeah. And also, I've heard the intra-A squad game, he had 100 versus Bumrah Siraj and Prasidh.
Okay, all right then. I mean, I really like the selection in England, right? Because that's where he's supposed to be good. I mean, look, there are guys over here who I feel will only come into play if there's an injury. Although I'm not Gautam Gambhir and I don't have any right to speak about this because I haven't sweat any actual sweat for India. So Gambhir obviously knows better. I am taking the piss out of him, by the way, for those of you who didn't get that.
Yes.
So yeah, Easwaran for me is a backup for the top order. If there are injuries, he comes in.
I think that's I don't think he plays.
Yeah, I don't think
in the
so.
First
Washington is probably backup for Jadeja. Although I will say this, Jadeja is obviously not just the experience, the fielding, the batting, but the fact that in England have more right-handed batters, he just makes more sense overall. I would be surprised
also,
to
Also, I think,
see
I wonder if the pitches do end up being more dry, you could go Jadeja in 7, Washington at 8.
But then you're not playing Kuldeep, right?
Yeah, that's the issue.
That's the issue. When I want Kuldeep to play if the surface is dry. It's. I mean, I just feel like those guys are backup players. Easwaran, Washington. I'm not sure about Shardul. I don't think Rana will come into play because he's like a traveling reserve. I mean, it's an interesting squad. Dhruv Jurel.
I think Rana, they just want Rana for pace.
Who do you think Dhruv Jurel is a replacement for? Just for Pant or maybe they could play both of those guys together?
I think they could play both because I think Jurel is an India's five-best batsman from whatever I've seen of him. He's always looked good to me. Like he just, like I think at one point, like in 6A innings, he had 550s or something like ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
So, he's clearly done well everywhere. So, if I have to do it, I have Karan 3, Shubman 4, Pant 5. One second.
I really like this Dhruv Jurel thing that you've done over here. Because in my mind, you were doing something on Excel. And that's why I was shooting your idea down. Had I known this was what you're talking about, I would have said yes from the get-go.
So, Dhruv Jurel 6, Ravindra Jadeja 7. I have Shardul Thakur at 8 for now because I don't really can't really think of anyone else. And then these three seamers, right? That's the way I'm thinking about it.
I don't know, man. I would play Kuldeep. I would play Kuldeep in the first test match. I would want to see how
I'm
he goes.
For that.
And the conditions are expected to be dry.
The other option is you have Kuldeep at 8 and then...
No, but in this team, I don't have Jadeja.
Right?
In this team, if it's not... If it's not turning heaps, then NKR is my number 7 and Jadeja is out. If it is turning, then Jadeja comes in for Nitish Kumar Reddy. And I would have the same bowling attack. I feel like I'm quite comfortable with Bumrah, Siraj and Prasidh over Akash, right? Because again, I know IPL form shouldn't count for anything, but I was really impressed, man. Like this guy has upskilled big time and he's gotten a lot more accurate. Whereas I remember him as someone who was wayward and he can crank it up.
Yeah, I think Prasidh has finally found his good, like own length, which is very good.
Yes.
I think that's a probably
he's,
good
He's part. Probably like it's the a, quickest yeah. after Bumrah, right? I think so.
Yes, I assume it. No, Rana would be quicker.
Yeah,
Rana
might be quicker. But Rana,
I think
Rana
is probably the quickest.
Rana is...
He's erratic though. He's a completely erratic.
Rana is a traveling reserve.
Like Harshit Rana is the kind of bowler England would pick, if it makes sense.
He is the kind of bowler that Gautam Gambhir loves. So that much we do know. Okay, we've kind of figured out team combinations and how that might change over the course of the series. Of course, some surfaces will be expected to turn more and they'll bring in more spinners. And then where there's no turn on offer, you maybe bring in your Shardul's and your Nitish Kumar Reddies and go from there. I'm only fearing that they might go for Nitish at 6 and Jadeja at 7 and Karun is not going to play. I feel like that's on the table over here.
So you're thinking this. Okay. Sorry, the other way around.
I agree, Singh, silly point. And Varun agrees as well. Nitish Kumar Reddy's bowling, you don't expect a lot from it in these conditions, I feel.
No, completely agree. I think it is... pretty useless with the ball, right?
Yes. Emu Boss is saying, where's Akshar, man? How many of those guys do you want to select then, right? Like Washington.
Yeah, Washington already. Like, I don't even know he plays every game.
And he's a right arm off spinner. Jadeja's a slow left armor. You have variety having Washington in there, right? I mean, Akshar is just unlucky to exist in the same era as Jadeja, if we're being real over here, right? All right. Krishna Srinivasan has an even hotter take. He says, I would rather have Kamboj instead of Rana. Isn't Kamboj?
Kamboj
like,
was good in the A games.
He was good in the
he
A
was good
games,
in the A games.
But yeah, I don't know, man. It might be too soon. Yeah,
he's a bit more like dibbly dobbly. Is it like he's like a budget Sam Cooke, I think, from what I've seen of him. Like,
yeah. Look, it'll be interesting to see what sort of bowling attacks India plays throughout the series and how they kind of sort out their number 6, 7, 8. I feel like that's the biggest
question. Like also, what KL Rahul do we see, right?
Man, I mean, he is versatile. He's done well in England as an opening
bat. Because we say, because I think all of us would agree he had a great series in Australia and he still only averages 30 in this, then the 12 latest BDT, isn't it?
It's true, but then again, he batted time, right?
Yeah.
That's important.
No, he batted time at the start, then he just stops making runs.
Yeah. I mean,
which is the, Which is the most frustrating
KL
thing.
KL has
about
got
him,
to be the unluckiest Indian cricketer of this generation because he's looked as an asset who can bat 1-7 any position. And he has been used as such. And he's kept wicket at times. And he's been an opening batter at times.
I don't think that's always been the case in Test cricket. His position is largely consistent until like 2023.
Yeah.
That's South Africa. That's when they move him around. But even as an opener, he's just so inconsistent. He starts off like, I think he has to have a good series.
He's the Aiden Markram of India.
Yeah. Yeah, he probably could.
Anyway,
I think, as I said, I think Shubman Gill is Aiden Markram of India.
We still have a wee bit more to talk about. So on this note, we shall be taking another break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Varun and Bairam, and we'll be back in another half a minute. So stick around. There's more.
A test happens when you're asleep. Where do you find the best match report? A cricketer's backstory is meticulously crafted by a great writer. But it's a day you're not on social media, and so you miss out. We all do this. It becomes almost a full-time job to follow the sport you love. But there is a solution. The emailer Best of Cricket can tell you what the main stories are and the best articles every single day. And when they can't find them, they even write their own. Now, instead of trudging through Twitter or Blue Sky, you can just wait for the Best of Cricket to email or WhatsApp the greatest cricket stories straight to you. Subscribe to Best of Cricket today.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Bairam and Varun, and I love this comment by Abhijit Bidwe, if you can bring it up, Varun, where he says KL is a batter of great knocks. I will take him everywhere. I agree, and his away record kind of stands out. You cannot not look at that, right?
Yeah. So what I think is he got the second most like centuries in center for an Indian opener, I think, after Gavaskar.
He might.
I think if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, I think you're on to something.
He's probably a better center opener than Sehwag, I think. You take him over Sehwag in center.
Yeah, because versus lateral movement, I feel like KL has been all right. And, you know, he was originally an opening bat. Now he's, what, 33 years of age, back at doing what he does best, I suppose. And he was really, like, I know the batting average of 30 looks underwhelming, but from what I remember of the Border Gavaskar Trophy, I liked what I saw from KL Rahul. So I have no
Again, I
have
if
no
he gets,
there.
Makes like 10-35 scores and not like 100 and like 10-9 ducks, I'll take it. Like, I just be consistent, man.
Honestly,
like,
Varun, out of all the people that I know, you are the one who has the least amount of confidence in India's batting lineup. Sure, they're inexperienced, but they're up against
100%.
Not a great bowling attack. Wokes is great. Sure,
yes,
in England.
Yes. Yeah, that's what it just made me laugh because I feel like every, all the English pundits are like, well, India have a really good shot. I'm like, I have no hope in this Indian team. Unless Bumrah, goes nuts.
Well, it's you and Graham Swan because he looks at this as a warm-up series for the Ashes.
Of course.
Yeah, we can't forget that, right? Okay, I feel like we've discussed more or less everything. The last bit that I want to touch on before we end this podcast, Varun, is the venues. Now, Headingley and Edgbaston are two venues where England relatively does well. And that's what fixed test centres does. It allows you to play your first two test matches at those venues, which they've done, right? I think that England are probably favourites in those two, right? But all three other venues, Lords, Old Trafford, the Oval, feel like India have a very, very good shout.
Yeah, that's it. But then again, are they going to be 1-1? Are they going to be 2-0 down? Are they going to be 2-0 up?
Are they going to be hampered by the rain, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Again, that's the unlucky thing. What if India have a really good test match, but they don't win because the rain hurts?
What if India are Ashes Manchestered? That's the term that I've come up with, right?
Yes, that's the good one. Yes, that's a very good one.
But anyway.
Moral winners.
When I look at the distribution of venues, I love this spaced out all test matches that allows us to breathe. And honestly, after all of these ICC tournaments, back to back to back, 18 months, three tournaments, I was burnt out. So I love the fact that we'll get our pockets within this series. I feel like India's best bets are Lords and the Oval. And even Old Trafford is good, man. But it's going to turn at the Oval. If it's a dry English summer, it always does kind of turn at the Oval. So that's where you can play both of Jadeja and Kuldeep, right? Similar story for Manchester, but I feel like you'll get a flat deck over there. And the Manchester rain is also infamous. Lords, I would say India favourites.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Bumrah plays definitely, right?
And Headingley and Edgbaston, I would say history suggests that England are favourites, but then I'm never going to kind of just say that this English team will win a game sure shot because that's just not how they play the sport.
Yeah. Again, it's very, I wouldn't be surprised if they're 2-0 up and they're let's just give them two matches to make the series more exciting.
Yeah. I honestly wouldn't even be surprised if England come back in the series because they did that in the Ashes, right? But they don't have Broad, who did that for them. And, I mean, Rishabh Pant was very happy that he's not going to be facing Anderson and Broad. Again, I feel for Jimmy, man. This was a series. Against this batting lineup, he would have been quite effective. And I don't know. It's just, it breaks my heart that he had to finish behind Shane Warne's test wicket tally, because it really could have been different.
Indeed.
Anyway.
So close.
So you guys also let us know how you think India and England might fare on each of those venues in the comment section. And I feel like we can end this podcast with some predictions, Varun. And let's start off with the highest run scorer of the series for you.
I'm going to go safe and say Joe Root.
I'm also going to go safe and say Joe Root. Honestly, Joe Root is averaging, not averaging, but he's scoring over 100 runs per test versus India. And I have a strong feeling you might see him score 500 plus runs in the series. And if that happens, he'll be 2,000 away from Sachin. And then all of a sudden, that gets a bit more real. If they get Joe Root out early consistently, then India should win this. I'll also say that. But for me, I'll go safe and say Root. For leading wicket taker, I'm also going safe and saying Chris Wokes. Although, Bumrah could still be leading wicket taker even in three test matches. Nailed this in the BGT? Do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah. You did say he has to get 30 to 35 wickets,
and he
right?
Did.
I remember. He nailed it. He would have got it more if he was fit for the last one.
Yeah. Krishna Srinivasan is saying Jaiswal is going to score 500 plus. I wouldn't be surprised. Although,
I'd love it.
New ball, lateral movement.
I think in it, before the BGT, I felt like if Jaiswal averaged 35 across the 10 tests, I think it's a success. He exceeded my expectations in Australia.
And I love Yashasvi.
Like now, I don't want him to average like 25 in England, but like if he averages like 35, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I think that's a good result.
Honestly, I feel like Jaiswal will have a good series. I also think that everyone has this Fab 4 of the future conversation. For me, it's just a Fab 1 for now. And Jaiswal is the Fab 1, right? I think he has a higher ceiling than Gill. And Rachin,
I think the second sentence is still holds true independently.
Yeah, and Rachin is still, it's still early days for Rachin. Cam Green has been injured, right? I don't know. Harry Brook can't play spin. What did you have up over here just now?
That was like, I think if the pitches are like the final, India's in trouble. I'm like, the second sentence is true on its own anyway.
And plus, if the pitches are like the World Test Championship final, it's a shootout, no?
Yeah, it would be a shootout.
It would be.
Do you want to go up against Bumrah in that case?
No, no. I wouldn't want to go up against Bumrah and Rawalpindi. Varun, so this is a different ball game altogether, right? And I've seen...
To be fair, like Pakistan would suit him because of reverse.
Yeah. And honestly, I've seen some of the videos where Bumrah is bowling in the nets. And yeah, I mean, that guy, I can just, you know, it's safe as houses.
Yeah, even in the second, he didn't even look close to his best and he still went like just six and over, didn't he?
Yeah, plus, I mean, if they're going to rest him, then he'll be even better. And, you know, they've gotten their or learned their lessons from Australia where they broke him and overbowled him. But then again, everything was on the line, so I don't entirely blame Rohit either. We did Root for highest run scorer. And is your highest wicket taker also Chris Wokes?
Yeah. I think it's a safe bet because I think he'll play all five. Yeah. Unless he's injured.
All right.
Like, again, like knowing our luck, what if Chris Wokes gets injured after the first test?
Knowing my luck or my jinxing powers, you never know. All right. Player of the series for you. I'm going Wokesy once again, by the way. I'm doubling down on Chris Wokes.
I agree with you. I think it does seem like a Wokes kind of... No, I still go Root because they always give it to the batters.
Root.
Yeah.
Okay.
Root.
Now, last prediction is the scoreline. And I originally thought 3-2 for either team, but then rain is surely it's going to spoil one test. So I'll go 3-1 England for now, you know. Although I'm not saying...
I'll go 3-1 England.
Yeah, I could see a world in which India win this test series. I'm not saying they can't. But right now, I just feel like England is kind of... You know, they're 60-40. Let's just say that.
I think if India win a test match, I'll take it.
Really?
Yeah.
Quite the pessimist, man.
I'll take it. Bro, I have no expectations. We lost 3-0 at home.
Yeah.
Then Gautam Gambhir drops Shubman Gill for Washington Sundar as a specialist batter. I don't think I've looked at test cricket the same way after that decision.
Imagine Washington Sundar batting at 3. Can we even like not see that happening with all that's going on in test cricket?
It's not an unusual possibility. That's what scares me, right?
Anyway, that'll be all for our predictions and this podcast in general. So let us know your predictions for highest run scorer, player of the series, highest wicket taker, and the overall scoreline in the comment section below. We'll circle back to these whenever the series is over. And yeah, we'll be creating...
And we'll probably be doing third innings, right?
Yeah. For this. We will be
some
doing,
combination
we'll of We'll be doing third innings. There'll be a few scorecards here and there because Jared is not going to one test match and he's going to all others. So, of course, you might not see a lot of him, or you will still see a lot of him, but you might see a bit of us as well, I suppose.
Yes.
I mean, we're super pumped. It is a marquee series. It's not a warm-up series, you know, not by any stretch. And I feel like we are about to see some, you know, instant classics as far as Test cricket goes. And yeah, that'll be all. So we'll see you soon at another show. We have lots of stuff planned. You're getting like 6 to 7 podcasts every week for this entire summer. That's the plan. And I am in charge of that. So you can trust me that we'll be able to execute it, right? But yeah, that kind of wraps this up. Just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the fun work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. And have a good week, a good weekend. Enjoy Test cricket. And yeah, that's all from us. Have a good one and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.